Shadow looked up.
It's in the trunk. I knew it was important, but I didn't know why. I thought maybe it meant the trunk of the tree. But he wasn't talking about that at all, was he?
Mr. Nancy frowned.
You lost me.
It's in the trunk,
said Shadow. He knew it was true. He did not know why it should be true, not quite, but of that he was completely certain. He got to his feet.
I gotta go. I'm sorry.
Mr. Nancy raised an eyebrow.
Why the hurry?
Because the ice is melting.
Chapter 20. It's spring, and the goat-footed balloon man whistles far, and we. E. E. Cummings. Shadow was driving a rental, and he came out of the forest slowly about 8:30 in the morning, drove down the hill doing under 45 miles per hour, and entered the town of Lakeside 3 weeks after he was certain he had left it for good. He drove through the city, surprised at how little it had changed in the last few weeks, which were a lifetime, and he parked halfway down the driveway that led to the lake. Then he got out of the car. There were no more ice fishing huts on the frozen lake any longer, no SUVs, nobody sitting at a fishing hole with a line and a 12-pack. The lake was dark, no longer covered with a blind white layer of snow. Now there were reflective patches of water on the surface of the ice, and the water beneath the ice was dark, and the ice itself was clear enough that the darkness beneath showed through. The sky was gray, but the icy lake was bleak and empty. Almost empty. There was one car remaining on the ice, parked out on the frozen lake almost beneath the bridge, so that anyone driving through the town, anyone crossing the town, could not help but see it. It was a dirty green in color, the sort of car that people abandon in parking lots, the kind that they just park and leave because it's just not worth coming back for. It had no engine. It was a symbol of a wager, waiting for the ice to become rotten enough and soft enough and dangerous enough to allow the lake to take it forever. There was a chain across the short driveway that led down to the lake and a warning sign forbidding entrance to people or to vehicles. Thin ice, it said. Beneath it was a hand-painted sequence of pictograms with lines through them. No cars, no pedestrians, no snowmobiles. Danger. Shadow ignored the warnings and scrambled down the bank. It was slippery. The snow had already melted, turning the earth to mud under his feet, and the brown grass barely offered traction. He skidded and slid down to the lake and walked carefully out onto a short wooden jetty, and from there, he stepped down onto the ice. The layer of water on the ice, made up of melted ice and melted snow, was deeper than it had looked from above, and the ice beneath the water was slicker and more slippery than any skating rink, so that Shadow was forced to fight to keep his footing. He splashed through the water as it covered his boots to the laces and seeped inside. Ice water. It numbed where it touched. He felt strangely distant as he trudged across the frozen lake, as if he were watching himself on a movie screen, a movie in which he was the hero, a detective, perhaps. There was a feeling of inevitability now, as if everything that was going to happen would play itself out, and there was nothing he could have done to change a moment of it. He walked toward the clunker, painfully aware that the ice was too rotten for this, and that the water beneath the ice was as cold as water could be without freezing. He felt very exposed out on the ice alone. He kept walking, and he slipped and slid. Several times he fell. He passed empty beer bottles and cans left to litter the ice, and he passed circular holes cut into the ice for fishing, holes that had not frozen again, each hole filled with black water. The clunker seemed further away than it had looked from the road. He heard a loud crack from the south of the lake, like a stick breaking, followed by the sound of something huge thrumming, as if a bass string the size of a lake was vibrating. Massively, the ice creaked and groaned like an old door protesting being opened. Shadow kept walking as steadily as he could.
This is suicide,
whispered a sane voice in the back of his mind.
Can't you just let it go? No,
he said aloud.
I have to know.
And he kept right on walking. He arrived at the clunker, and even before he reached it, he knew that he had been right. There was a miasma that hung about the car, something that was at the same time a faint, foul smell and was also a bad taste in the back of his throat. He walked around the car looking inside. The seats were stained and ripped. The car was obviously empty. He tried the doors. They were locked. He tried the trunk, also locked. He wished that he had brought a crowbar. He made a fist of his hand inside his glove. He counted to three, then smashed his hand hard against the driver's side window glass. His hand hurt. The side window was undamaged. He thought about running at it. He could kick the window in, he was certain, if he didn't skid and fall on the wet ice, but the last thing he wanted to do was disturb the clunker enough that the ice beneath it would crack. He looked at the car. Then he reached for the radio antenna, the kind which was meant to go up and down, but which had stopped going down a decade ago and had remained in the up position ever since, and with a little waggling, he broke it off at the base. He took the thin end of the antenna. It had once had a metal button on the end, but that was lost in time, and with strong fingers he bent it back up into a makeshift hook. Then he rammed the extended metal antenna down between the rubber and the glass of the front window, deep into the mechanism of the door. He fished in the mechanism, twisting, moving, pushing the metal antenna about until it caught, and then he pulled up. He felt the improvised hook sliding from the lock, uselessly. He sighed. Fished again, slower, more carefully. He could imagine the ice grumbling beneath his feet as he shifted his weight. And slow, and he had it. He pulled up on the aerial, and the front door locking mechanism popped up. Shadow reached down one gloved hand and took the door handle, pressed the button, and pulled. The door did not open.
It's stuck,
he thought.
Iced up, that's all.
He tugged, sliding on the ice, and suddenly the door of the clunker flew open, ice scattering everywhere. The miasma was worse inside the car, a stench of rot and illness. Shadow felt sick. He reached under the dashboard, found the black plastic handle that opened the trunk, and tugged on it hard. There was a thunk from behind him as the trunk door released. Shadow walked out onto the ice, slipped and splashed around the car, holding onto the side of it as he went.
It's in the trunk,
he thought. The trunk was open an inch. He reached down and opened it the rest of the way, pulling it up. The smell was bad, but it could have been much worse. The bottom of the trunk was filled with an inch or so of half-melted ice. There was a girl in the trunk. She wore a scarlet snowsuit, now stained, and her mousy hair was long and her mouth was closed. The Shadow could not see the blue rubber band braces, but he knew that they were there. The cold had preserved her, kept her as fresh as if she had been in a freezer. Her eyes were wide open, and she looked as if she had been crying when she died, and the tears that had frozen on her cheeks had still not melted. Her gloves were bright green.
You were here all the time,
said Shadow to Allison McGovern's corpse.
Every single person who drove over that bridge saw you. Everyone who drove through the town saw you. The ice fishermen walked past you every day, and nobody knew.
And then he realized how foolish that was. Somebody knew. Somebody had put her here. He reached into the trunk to see if he could pull her out. He had found her, after all. Now he had to get her out. He put his weight on the car as he leaned in. Perhaps that was what did it. The ice beneath the front wheels went at that moment, perhaps from his movements, perhaps not. The front of the car lurched downward several feet into the dark water of the lake. Water began to pour into the car through the open driver's door. Water splashed about Shadow's ankles, although the ice he stood on was still solid. He looked around urgently, wondering how to get away, and then it was too late, and the ice tipped precipitously, throwing him against the car and the dead girl in the trunk, and the back of the car went down, and Shadow went down with it into the cold waters of the lake. It was 9:10 in the morning on March the 23rd. He took a deep breath before he went under, closing his eyes, but the cold of the lake water hit him like a wall, knocking the breath from his body. He tumbled downward into the murky ice water, pulled down by the car. He was under the lake, down in the darkness and the cold, weighed down by his clothes and his gloves and his boots, trapped and swathed in his coat, which seemed to have become heavier and bulkier than he could have imagined. He was falling still. He tried to push away from the car, but it was pulling him with it, and then there was a bang which he could hear with his whole body, not his ears, and his left foot was wrenched at the ankle. The foot twisted and trapped beneath the car, as it settled on the lake bottom, and panic took him. He opened his eyes.